This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. You're listening to episode 47 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flait in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max, how are you?
I'm good, David. You know, as long as we're playing the FAA drinking game, this might be the episode where we get really loaded.
Yeah, I think maybe we'll call this one off because even though that anybody who's been following the news over the last 7 days, it's been all FAA all the time. It's kind of amazing that simultaneously they can issue two different press releases that for all intents and purposes contradict each other. The first one was the FAA speaks out about model aircraft. We wanted regs. Well, we got them, but I don't think this is what we had in mind. Then we got the news that U.S. national parks are going to ban UAVs. We have a fourth UAS test site operational. That was good news. Then we've got the Washington Post doing a hit piece or hit pieces on UAVs. We've got a prize for your drone video. The latest news on UAVs in Brazil and Australia. And CNN, this is where I wish I had my, this is CNN, proves that news drones are safe. Well, our first story today comes from AIN Online. FAA claims authority over unsafe model aircraft flights. Well, this was the big news this week, folks. The FAA came out with regulations, but it really wasn't for commercial UAVs, was it?
No, it certainly wasn't. This was a policy notice that the FAA put out. In the policy notice, they stated that the FAA Modernization and Reform Act of 2012, that it gives them, the FAA, authority to regulate model aircraft as unmanned aircraft if the model is flown in an unsafe manner. Now, according to their press release, the FAA says that this guidance that they're offering up, quote, comes after recent incidents involving the reckless use of unmanned model aircraft near airports and involving large crowds of people.
Which is really kind of a frightening thing. In all my opinion of it was, this was definitely a response to the NTSB's ruling about Perker, which said his drone wasn't a drone, but it was a radio controlled or a model aircraft. So I hate to say this way, but I came off feeling like this was the FAA throwing a temper tantrum.
It has a little tinge of that, I think, David.
It's like, fine, be that way. You say I can't regulate UAVs, but I can regulate model airplanes, so bleep, that's what I'm going to do. But the further into the article, the regulations you read, there's some other interesting points to it, huh?
For me, it's kind of a mixture of things that make sense and things that leave me kind of pondering the whole topic a little bit. But what the FAA is doing here, they're trying to sort of restate the definition of model aircraft. And, I mean, they say some things that make sense. They say that model aircraft must not interfere with manned aircraft. Okay, that sounds like a good thing. That they must be flown within line of sight. I think that's the same criteria as, you know, we've always operated under, that they have to operate only for hobby or recreational purposes, not commercial, and flight within 5 miles of an airport requires notification. They offer some guidance. They have a little chart that's kind of interesting on what is allowable and what is not. And the allowable category is hobby or recreation, and unallowable is not hobby or recreation.
Read to that as commercial.
As commercial.
let's start off with hobby or recreation, flying a model aircraft at the local model aircraft club. Well, that makes perfect sense. Right.
That's allowable.
Not hobby or recreational, receiving money for demonstrating aerobatics with a model aircraft. I have a problem with that one because flying clubs have air shows. You know, the museum out on in Hawaii at Pearl Harbor, they have the world's greatest little air show, which is all model airplanes. And they offer cash prizes for best airplane, best demonstration. So is that a prize? Isn't that receiving money for demonstrating a model airplane? So Let's go on to the next one.
Yeah, because this theme kind of continues. So the hobby or recreational use that's allowable is taking photographs with a model aircraft for personal use. But what would not be allowed is a realtor using a model aircraft to photograph a property that he is trying to sell and using the photos of, in the property's real estate listing. Another example is it would be a person photographing a property or event and selling the photos to someone else. So here again, it's, you know, you can take pictures with a model aircraft, photographs or videos, if it's for your own use, but not if it's to be used in any kind of a situation that looks the least bit commercial.
And the next one really gets snarky because we know that Bezos and Amazon want to fly packages. As a sidelight, we have WB Mason, which is a stationery company that sponsors our Phillies here in Philadelphia. They have a new commercial where there's a whole bunch of people sitting around a room and they need to come up with a new delivery system. And they come up with a hexacopter delivering their stationery. And then they have two guys in duck hunting outfits with shotguns that proceed to blow out the drone out. And they come to the conclusion that that isn't a good idea, is delivery by drone. But however, the FAA says you can use a model aircraft to move a box from point to point without any compensation. I don't know of many model airplanes that do this, but if you deliver, if you charge a fee to move that box by that model airplane back and forth, that's not hobby or recreation, that's commercial. So this is a sort of a smarky argument against Amazon and their packages delivered by drone.
And it continues. The last example in this little chart from the FAA is allowable is viewing a field. This is in the agriculture area. Viewing a field to determine whether crops need water when they are grown for personal enjoyment. So you can fly over your garden, I guess, and take a look at how things are doing. But not allowable, not hobby or recreation. The FAA says determining whether crops need to be watered that are grown as part of commercial farming operation. So, you know, running through all this, as we've said, is this aspect of commercial use. And the thing that I don't really get is that shouldn't it be based on the aircraft that's being used, how it's being used, and not whether someone is paying someone else to use it that way? I mean, if this is about safety, what difference does it make if it's, you know, commercial or non-commercial? The real issue should be, is it safe or is it not safe? Is the aircraft safe? Is the operator, the pilot, operating it in a safe manner? Does he have the training, the certification? You know, all of those things that we've talked about in the past. So it's, to me, this is kind of disconcerting. But I will say one thing in the FAA's defense, which is that, you know, they're trying to do this, trying to comply with the requirements as set down by the U.S. Congress. And so the FAA doesn't really have a lot of latitude, I think, in some of these areas. But still, it looks like we're trying to solve the wrong problem.
Yeah, this one came sort of out of the blue, and it's sort of like you're scratching your head going, okay, someone actually had to sit down and think about this, and when we could be using time doing it much more productively. But I have to admit, it was effective. It proceeded to piss off a lot of people, is the only way to describe it. Especially somebody who the FAA really could be using as an ally, which is the Academy of Model Aeronautics. And they aren't happy. And as they've been telling the FAA, we've been monitoring model aircrafts for 77 years without your help. Thank you very much. We don't need this. Furthermore, the special rule for model aircraft established by Congress exempts model aircraft from regulation as long as the activity is, quote, conducted in accordance and within the safety programming of a community-based organization. Well, that's the AMA, and so the FAA is, I don't want to say they've overstepped their bounds, but they really have ticked off the model aircraft people, because AMA seriously has been working to try to integrate quadcopters and UAVs and drones into their model to provide safety standards. Why would the FAA want to undercut that?
It does seem kind of messy. I don't know what happens next. And actually, this isn't something that is a regulation that goes into effect, what the FAA's released. This is something that's open for comment. So there's a comment period here. And in some of the links, you'll be able to see where you can contribute to the conversation or the dialogue.
I think basically, Max, we need to yank that out of the and make sure that that specifically is in the show notes.
Because that's important, yeah. And there's no guarantee as to to what degree the FAA is actually listening to us, but hopefully they will. If you have an opinion on this, let's get it in there. And as always with these kinds of things, and maybe this is obvious, but I'll say it anyway. If you do respond, make it factual. Try to avoid emotional rants, things like that, because those don't have quite the impact that a calm, reasoned argument makes. So that's just a little bit of a strategy when it comes to giving some feedback to the U.S. government.
Continuing on with the U.S. government, this week, the National Park Service issued a prohibition of unmanned aircraft in national parks. And this article came from TheGuardian.com. So the National Park Service is not banning permanently UAVs, but they're suspending them until they actually come up with some regulations. Well, it sounds like they're at least moving quicker than the FAA. Right now there's no is no, but we're going to work it to figure out something better later.
Yeah, and the motivation for the Park Service to do this is because of some incidents where unmanned aircraft have annoyed park visitors, wildlife has been impacted, and there have been some safety concerns as well. And so, as David mentions, they're issuing this ban now. The effect is large. The effect is 84 million acres of public lands and waterways, which is pretty significant. There are some permits that they've already issued for unmanned aircraft, and those are suspended as well until they can be reviewed and approved. And any additional requests to operate UAVs in the national parks need to go through an approval process. I mentioned this to my wife, David, and her first reaction was, good. She said, I don't want to be sitting in Yosemite or a national park trying to enjoy the peace and quiet and serenity of the environment and then get buzzed by some, little gnat sounding quadcopter that's trying to shoot some video. So I can't say I completely disagree with her.
My worst fear is, we're coming up on the 4th of July holiday here, and can you imagine what some idiot could do with a quadcopter or a hexacopter flying over the National Mall with the best intentions? I mean, it's the nation's birthday in the nation's capital with the fireworks and stuff, and all you need is that drone to go out of control and land on how many people and hurt and injure. If they're going to be able to issue permits and people are going to be able to prove they can fly safely and stuff, absolutely. And part of the article said that the National Park Service is looking to use unmanned aircraft for search and rescue. Yay! Fire right. operations. Yay! And scientific study. So they're not anti-drone. It's just they want to do it the right way, which I think still puts them like three or four steps ahead of the FAA. They seem to be thinking this through with a clear head and not fighting windmills later.
Now, our friend Grant McCarron sent us an article. This was actually written by Ben Sandilands. Crikey blog from Australia, titled U.S. Ban for National Park Drones Contrasts to Australian Indifference. And we'll put a link to this in the show notes as well, but it's kind of interesting. The Australian Civil Aviation Authority is they're proposing that UAVs weighing less than 2 kilograms should not be regulated, right? They're just drawing that line, saying below that, I don't know if they're calling them model aircraft or not, but below that, we're not going to regulate them. That's what they're proposing. But Ben writes in the blog that he expects that CASA and the minister will embrace the chaos and the maiming, damaging, and even loss of life that is expected to ensue as the popularity of lightweight drones causing small change takes off. There's another extreme, which is kind of open season, and I don't think that's a great idea either.
All right. Well, I guess we should talk about some FAA good news. I don't even know if that's even possible, but Texas is up and running. Yay.
All right.
The FAA has issued a 2-year certificate of waiver, or COA, to the Texas A&M University Corpus Christi UAS test site, making it 4 of 6 to become operational.
Yeah, this is good. These seem to be coming out pretty regularly now. The 2-year COA seems to be a feature of these. Another feature is that the COA is specific not only to the site, but also the type of UAS to be used. And so in this case, it's an AAAI, which is American Aerospace, an RS-16, which is a fixed-wing aircraft. It's a pretty good size. It's got a maximum gross takeoff weight of 85 pounds. 13-foot wingspan, almost 13 feet. And it's got a pretty significant endurance, David, 12 to 16 hours of endurance with a 15,000-foot ceiling.
Uh-oh. Those are like stats that would drive our friend Rob nuts, because that's airspace flight level.
That's well into the national airspace.
So this will be interesting to watch. As you all know, each site has their own mission objective, and this will be the safety operations and data gathering in authorized airspace, UAS airworthiness standards, command and control link technology, human factor issues for UAS control stations layouts, and detect and avoid technology. So, yeah, they're putting this up into the airspace because that's what its primary mission is, to integrate with it and setting minimums for what these drones should be doing.
Right. And they have some specific projects that they already have in mind. It includes the preservation and restoration of the ocean and ocean wetlands. Also, research in advance of approaching tropical depressions. So there's a weather issue. And also to support the law enforcement in the Padre Island National Seashore. So they have kind of a oceanic theme to many of the projects. So that's great. It's good to hear that they've gotten the approval from the FAA to get started. And we'll look for the remaining 2 UAS test sites to get that soon. David, maybe we should talk about this Washington Post investigation. This is called When Drones Fall from the Sky.
And actually, it's a multi-piece Washington Post investigation. Boy, does this become a hit piece on the UAV-UAS industry, and specifically the military's operation of UAVs.
Their investigation utilized some Freedom of Information Act requests to get data, and they find that since the year 2001, more than 400 large U.S. military drones have crashed around the world. Now, the causes for these crashes, well, I mean, it's kind of like what you would expect in a way, things like mechanical breakdowns and human error in bad weather. But what the Washington Post does with this data, well, they say that they consider this to be a, quote, a record of calamity that exposes the potential dangers of throwing open American skies to drone traffic. So, okay, let's, you know, take it at face value. The military experience with drones seems to be characterized by a number that sounds big, 400, in terms of crashes. But David, what does that mean? Does it mean anything when you start to talk about commercial use of drones? They're different aircraft. Is the military experience in aviation indicative of what you would expect in the civilian world?
No, and 400 aircraft seems to be a sizable number, but think of what kind of exponential growth we've had for UAVs since that time in the military. I mean, you're talking about a smaller percentage as the years go on, and the implication is it's all pilot error. The second part of this Washington Post piece is they have audio transcripts from the Air Force pilots when some of this happens, and the audio transcripts can be very, the best way to word it is damning, but there are lies, there are damn lies, and then there are statistics. You know, military, flying a Predator in a hostile environment like Afghanistan is not necessarily the same commercial viability that somebody would be flying a UAV over there. Oh, wait a minute, it's a UAV, so we can't do this. Over their vineyard to check on their grapes to make sure they need water. Now, you can't do it with a radio-controlled airplane, and you can't really do it with a UAV either. Never mind. But
but yeah, that's a good point. Military missions are different, and I think that everyone can kind of envision how that's different. The Washington Post says that, you know, this problem, as they see it, challenges, quote, the federal government's assurances that drones will be able to fly safely over populated areas and in the same airspace as passenger planes. I don't really think the federal government is assuring that drones, you know, will be able to fly safely. The FAA is saying that drones won't fly over populated areas. They won't fly in the same airspace as passenger planes until they can be made to fly safely. So, you know, I think the Washington Post is kind of getting ahead of themselves a little bit.
Their prime example was a female U.S. Air Force operator that evidently was flying the aircraft, a Predator. Somehow it got inverted and she didn't realize it, and it flew into the ground. We have flights into controlled airspace, controlled flight into ground.
Terrain,
that's right. We have controlled flight into terrain by pilots all the time in the civilian airspace. So, okay, it happens with a drone. Spatial disorientation happens whether you're flying a drone or whether you're actually in the aircraft. How many aircraft have we lost because of spatial disorientation? In the military, it happens a lot when pilots are flying at night. So up isn't down and down, or darkness or foul weather. So articles are written to provide excellent headlines, but there's a lot of fluff underneath the headlines.
And just to finish up on this, the Washington Post's analysis identified some safety hurdles, some what they call fundamental safety hurdles, and listen to four of them. A limited ability to detect and avoid trouble, pilot error, persistent mechanical defects, unreliable communications links. Well, to me, that sounds a lot like the objectives.
Garbage running the mill Cessna.
It happens everywhere. And with regard to UAVs, these are the kinds of things that the UAS test sites are devoted to exploring and working out. So I just don't see this as an out-of-control situation. I think that it's, if anything, it's just the opposite. It gets the Washington Post a lot of attention.
And let's face it, three out of those four could be used to describe what our friend Bill English presented to the general public this week is Asiana. The Asiana crash was a limited ability to detect and avoid trouble because they weren't paying attention. Clearly pilot error unreliable communication. Okay. The unreliable communication links was between the pilots. So that's just wording around.
We'll be talking about that a lot more on the Airplane Geeks podcast next episode. David, let's just mention real quickly, there's something called Drone Prize 2014, which you can learn about at droneprize.com. And the idea here is that they want to use, they call it the aerial perspective, to serve the greater good. So if you fly your UAV with a civic purpose on some kind of a mission to improve society, and you have a video that you can share with the world to show that that you've made a difference, you can enter it in this contest to win more than, in total, I think, $10,000 in prizes. So it's worth checking out. It's sponsored by the Association for Unmanned Vehicle Systems International, AUVSI, and also the AUVSI Cascade chapter. So we'll have a link to that in the show notes. Entries accepted through July 27th of this year, 2014. Oh, one last thing. It's for U.S. residents only. So sorry, you folks in the rest of the world.
Well, it's World Cup time. We might as well talk about Brazil. This was from the Runway Girl Network. Brazil eyes drone boom. So it looks like Brazil is getting into not only World Cup, but UAVs. So given that you are on the PAXX podcast with Mary Kirby and the Runway Girl Network, why don't you tell us a little bit about this story?
Yeah, this is interesting. It notes that Brazil doesn't have particularly restrictive regulations for UAVs. And so it's a big growing business there. Notes that in Sao Paulo alone, there are 8 UAV manufacturers. Brazilian Air Force Major Luiz Felipe says that doesn't mean you can spy with your drone as you like, as we maybe have seen with the World Cup games. But it also notes that the Brazilian Air Force is using 2 Elbit Systems drones for patrol and surveillance, things like borders, major sporting events like the games, the World Cup, and drug smuggling activity. So we'll put a link to that in the show notes. One final thing on that, it does note that there's no new news on this World Cup spying incident. In fact, a FIFA spokesperson says that they don't even have confirmation that it actually happened. So that's kind of interesting.
And let's move over to our other big listener, which is CASA plans legal action over drone crash in Geraldton. This was from abc.net.au. We talked about this earlier, where a triathlon competitor sustained severe injuries when she was allegedly hit with a UAV. The pilot has claimed that the aircraft, he lost control after being channel hopped. So looks like CASA, the Civil Aviation Safety Authority, plans to take legal action against the pilot. So that'll be something we'll need to follow up on, how Australia handles that.
One last item. This is in Gadget.com. CNN wants to prove that drones are safe for news reporting. This is really interesting. I think something that we should spend some more time in the future talking about, David. But CNN and the Georgia Institute of Technology, they started a research project. They want to understand how news gathering UAVs could be used safely in the U.S. airspace. So they plan to study that and provide the results to the FAA to help make the argument that news organizations should be able to and can, in fact, use UAVs in the news production process and do that safely.
And, of course, we can't finish the episode without our video of the week. This one's kind of personally selfish for me. My friend Parker and Airwolf, the UAV I flew, he videoed a wedding, but at the end of the wedding had its own fireworks and was able to fly Airwolf up through the fireworks for some interesting video. So watch the whole thing about video the wedding, as well as having the guts to fly your UAV in the middle of flak.
Yeah,
it's the best way to describe it.
Amazing. Well, so people spend a lot of money on a lot of professional photographers and videographers to document their wedding. And certainly an aerial view gives it a different perspective and something kind of really special that the happy couple can look at for years to come. So that's pretty cool. It's a great find. We've received a lot of listener feedback in the past week or so, and I wish we had more time to talk about more of it. One thing that I think is worth mentioning, this came in from Charlie, is that the television program 60 Minutes did a segment called Drones Over America, which is, I think, a nice segment about UAVs and what some of the issues are and where we're going, what's happening. It's the kind of thing where if you're having difficulty explaining to somebody what the big deal is all about, I just point them to this 60 minutes segment, and it's a way to learn a lot about what's going on in 15 minutes or so. We'll put that in the show notes.
Well, we've run a little long, but the FAA gave us a lot of stuff to talk about and think about. My personal editorial is find the link in the show notes where you can send some accurate feedback to the FAA. They need to hear it. But like Max said earlier, try to leave the emotions out of it and keep it factual and do us all a good. I know that I want to write my review and post it. So, Max, where can people find us?
Well, they can find us at the UAVDigest.com. If you'd like to go directly to the show notes, you can visit the UAVDigest.com/47. This is episode 47.
And, of course, we have our Twitter presence, which is at UAVDigest, Facebook, which is /UAVDigest. And you can always send us listener mail at feedback@theUAVDigest.com. Don't forget to leave either a review if you love us on iTunes or Stitcher.com. And, of course, you can always pick up some UAV Digest swag at cafepress.com/theUAVDigest. So with that, I'd like to thank everyone. Hopefully everyone enjoyed our little segment that we snuck in between the last two episodes with Roger O'Connor. And I do want to shout out that check out the show notes, because Roger's looking for a DJI Phantom, and we hope we can find it for him. And there will be a surprise between this week and next week's little episode, another fantastic interview that we did at Pilot Day. So I guess on that note, this is David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thanks for listening, everyone.